The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance
on News Talk.
Now, most famously known to many for her book and movie adaptation, Something from Tiffany's, Irish author Melissa Hill takes to Manhattan once again with a new book, which is called Only in New York. And Melissa is with me now. Good morning, Melissa, and welcome.
Good morning. Thank you.
Now, we'll talk about we won't give too much away, but let's talk about the character and the location.
Okay, so Only in New York features Hannah. She's an Irish-born publicist and she needs a fresh start in New York, but she can't afford the rents in New York. Because
are you going to tell us why she needs the fresh start?
No, we'll discover that later. Okay. But she can't afford the rents in New York and she has the opportunity to house sit for one of her celebrity clients, an influencer who has bought into a gorgeous landmark Upper East Side building in New York. But there is one snag, and the snag is that the neighbours in that building are at war. It's a co-op building and they all have a veto on who they have in the building and who they don't. And they're not very happy about this new money influencer coming in and disrupting the place.
And this new money influencer, who's a decade younger than Hannah.
Yes.
And Hannah's thinking, I've lost my way.
How did I get here?
I should be like her. I should have these kind of assets at this stage in my life, but she doesn't.
She doesn't. No, for various reasons. But the one thing Hannah is a people person. And when she hears of this neighbour dispute, she thinks, well, look, you know, PR is my business. Maybe I'll try and
a mediator. And break some,
yes, absolutely. And break down some boundaries.
But of course, it doesn't all go smoothly.
Definitely not. Never does. Only in New York. Yeah.
Now, tell me about your tapestry, your location. I mean, why New York?
Well, I've always had a fascination. Some people would call it an obsession with New York. But I find it's such a rich place to, you know, find inspiration. Every corner, there's something different happening. And in my books in particular, I love the idea that lives collide in unexpected ways. Mm. And I feel like somewhere like New York, that happens a lot. There is this almost this sense of serendipity. Whenever I go there myself, I find that I come away with so many different ideas.
I always feel it's you're plugged into the wall when you're in New York. The
Very
energy
much.
Levels are phenomenal.
Yeah, and so much of it also is so recognisable for us. You know, we all grew up with the movies and the TV show set there. So it almost feels as though you know it.
Yeah. Now, it's funny, I don't know if you're familiar with the work of thriller writer Steve Cavanagh. And Steve said he sets his thrillers in New York. Why? Because he doesn't have to waste time describing things.
Well, that's
everybody
true.
Knows New York.
That's actually a very good point. It's a very good point. And I also find that I get feedback from my readers. And if some of them haven't been in New York, they say they want to go. And if any of them have been there, they feel like they're back there. So that's a good compliment. And I'm happy with that.
OK, how did you get into the business of writing?
Oh, gosh, talk about going back.
I mean, was it school days where you...
No, I was always I always loved writing, but I loved telling stories as opposed to the technical side of writing. So I was always very interested in people, always very interested in serendipity, I guess. How, you know, what happens when lives collide and where does that go? Human nature, I guess, is what I was most interested in.
I read that you weren't sportif in school for a very good reason.
A very strange reason, yes. Well, I was born with only one shoulder blade.
And I knew that. And when you walked in, I was kind of saying, would I be able to tell? The answer is no.
I know. Everybody says that you can't tell. And look, luckily enough, it hasn't affected me in any meaningful way. I had the opportunity when I was younger to have some corrective surgery, but the surgery was quite risky. So we decided against it. But luckily enough, it hasn't affected
me. So there's no basketball?
No cartwheels.
No cartwheels.
Not that I'd be inclined, but no. And I generally don't swim, but I'm not sporty. So I suppose what that meant was that I spent a lot more time on my own, maybe as a child.
Can you remember? Remember the kind of books you were reading as a teenager?
Oh yeah, Lady Bird. Well, I started with Lady Bird books because my mother used to buy me a Lady Bird book every time I had a dentist appointment. So that was my reward.
Okay.
So again, I had this lovely association with books as being a good thing. And of course they are. So as a teenager, I read Stephen King to beat the band. Stephen King was my absolute favourite. And my daughter now is reading Stephen King, which I'm really pleased about.
Okay. And what about the classics? I mean, were you into Jane Austen or any?
Not really. No, I found them a little bit too slow and ponderous, to be honest with you. Again, I just love plot. I'm very, you know, plot heavy and human stories, I guess.
So we presume then you were bookish in school. So you go to college, you do English Lit, you get a first and then you go straight into writing.
Not how it happened. No. I found that college life just didn't suit me at all. I felt I felt a little bit homesick as well because I'm from a small town in Tipperary.
Uh-huh.
And I moved to the Big Smoke and found it felt a little bit lost.
Was it the big smoke in Dublin or the big smoke in Cork? Or the lesser smoke in Cork?
It was actually both of them, believe it or not. I did Cork first and then tried Dublin.
Yeah.
Dublin went a little bit better. But ultimately, I found that I kind of wanted to be out there doing, you know, I wanted to be out there meeting people. Mm. I was probably socialising a little bit too much.
So you enjoyed college?
Absolutely.
But not college courses?
Exactly. Probably like a lot of people, yeah. Yeah.
And what was it about the English course that, you know, didn't turn you on? Was it that it was so divorced from the kind of stuff you were reading?
I think it was the lack of structure. I found that there was maybe one or two lectures, you know, once a week or twice a week. And I found that I missed being more active, I suppose, and going here, there and everywhere like it was at school. So it was probably a little bit too quiet for me.
Okay, so goodbye college.
Yes.
And hello what?
Hello banking.
You're a banker, my goodness.
Yeah, well, I was in the retail side, so I was chatting to people. I was at front-facing role and I was, you know, talking to everybody who would come in, cash their checks and bits and bobs like that. So it was great fun.
Okay, observing human nature, of course, in
yes,
the raw.
You learn so much about yeah. people.
Now then, how do you become a writer? Obviously, you like to write in your spare time, but it's one thing to be kind of doodling at that and become a professional writer. So how was that transition?
I suppose it was baby steps, really. I mean, again, as I said, I've always loved to write stories. So I wasn't interested in doing any kind of technical writing or journalism per se. But I was reading a book. I mean, when you're a reader, you always, I suppose, have secret ambitions that maybe you might be able to write. But again, it felt like such a big thing to move from reading to writing. But I was reading a particular book on a flight one day and I put it down and just wasn't grabbing me. And I said, oh, I could do better.
I could do better than that.
You know, one of those throwaway comments that really you don't
and
mean.
And I hate putting a book down, by the way, but sometimes you
same.
Have to.
Yes,
you know.
Exactly. And I'm the same. So it was a throwaway comment. I didn't think anything of it. But my husband, he said, well, go on then. So he threw down the gauntlet and I thought, oh, well, I have to do it now. But not expecting that it would go anywhere.
Do you always do what your husband tells you?
No, but when somebody throws me a challenge, I can't help but take it up. So I did start and I found that I really enjoyed the process and it seemed to really suit me and I just kept going until it was finished. Didn't tell anybody I was doing it.
And what was the first book?
Something You Should Know.
Something You Should Know.
Yes.
So you have this manuscript. What happens to it?
Well, a couple of friends and family read it and they said, actually, this is pretty good. I think they were more surprised than I was. And they said, why don't you send it off for publication? And I thought, really? Would it be?
In my mind's eye, I imagine you send something unsolicited to a publisher and there's a mound.
Yes.
It's not even a stack. It's a mound of manuscripts in the corner.
Mm.
And
it's only in retrospect that I realise how difficult it was. And I think if I had known how difficult it usually is, I probably wouldn't have attempted it.
So what happened?
I'm not in the least bit competitive. It did get picked up. It got picked up by Poolbeg, who started so many of our...
And did you have any entree, someone who rang them up and said, by the way, I've got something you should read. It's a friend of mine, da-da-da. Did you have any entree?
No. It was
cold calling?
Yes, absolutely. Because again, that'll tell you how naive I was. Because I really had no idea. I didn't know anything about the industry. I just knew that I loved... The writers that I loved at the time were Sheila Flanagan, Patricia Scanlon, Kathy Kelly. They had all been started also at Poolbeg.
Yeah.
So I thought, okay, well, they're my first port of call straight away. And they picked up Something You Should Know and it went on to sell well. And then I just kept going and haven't stopped.
How many books now?
16, I think. Only New York is number 16, yes.
Okay, Only New York number 16. How many copies or are you counting worldwide?
Oh, it's impossible to tell because there are so many languages and so many territories. But it's definitely in the millions, but I couldn't tell you how many.
26 languages.
26 languages, yes.
Fantastic. So you put the thing out in the bookshelves, in the bookshops and so on, and they sell. And there might be a nibble from the big and small screens. So when did that start to happen?
Pretty much all of my books have been optioned over the years. But with options, I suppose I've come to learn that they don't necessarily mean guarantees. It's just such a long shot.
They pay you an amount of money to hang on to the rights for a certain amount of time.
Exactly. And it's a long shot. And there are so many moving parts, so many things that have to line up for it to happen. But I was lucky with Something from Tiffany's because it was optioned by Fox when it first came out. And they kept renewing the option over and over and over again. And I thought, OK, but I would like to see a movie happening. But nothing happened. So I decided not to renew the rights with them, which was a bit of a risk.
Certainly
but
was.
I thought, look.
But then it was never going to get made.
Well, what was the point?
You get a nice little check every so often to renew the option. But You'd prefer to see it on the screen.
Absolutely. And at that point, I had started working with Hallmark and they had optioned one of my previous books, or they had made one of my previous books, A Gift to Remember. And they did a lovely movie, but very specific to their requirements.
Yeah.
But I loved working with them. So I kind of felt, well, look, if it doesn't get made by Fox, it will probably get made by Hallmark at some point, because we had a great working relationship at the time as well. And but as it turned out, when the Fox renewal didn't happen, somehow or another, Reese Witherspoon and Hello Sunshine got wind of the fact that the project was back on the table. They called to ask, could we talk about it? And I'm like, well, yeah.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Because Reese is the dream person for any author who you know, is interested in that, because she is such a books person. She loves books and she loves movies, and she takes a lot of care with her adaptations as well, which I found really, really refreshing, because she, you know, I was very much involved in the production process, the pre-production and the production process. I got to go to New York to watch the movie being filmed, which was an absolute dream come true.
Now, it's a question I frequently ask authors, and that is, how did the visualization on the screen tie up with your imagination version of the tale?
It's not something that ever bothers me, because I'm not precious about any changes or anything like that.
No, but even
that.
Your characters and the actors who play.
Oh, yeah,
you think
yeah.
to yourself, that's not how I imagined it at all.
No, I think sometimes it can be even better, because I think for the actors that we got to play the roles of Rachel and Ethan, and Gary in particular, because Gary was played by Ray Nicholson, who is Jack Nicholson's son. And we had a table read ahead of the production, and I actually, to my shame, did not know who Ray Nicholson was. But when his face came up on screen, it was a Zoom call. When his face came up on screen, I thought, oh my gosh, now I know exactly. Because the smile was so similar, the exact same. And I was so tempted to ask him to do that Here's Johnny line, but I you know, it was to be too cringe to do that. But they were actually a lovely cast, a lovely crew, and I so enjoyed working with them.
Now, how did you adapt to that different world? I mean, it's one thing to be sitting at home in your garret, your attic, your office, writing away on your own and maybe bouncing a few things off those you bounce, and probably your husband and so on. But it's another thing to be in that Hollywood world.
It's a very strange world, because it's very dynamic and lots of things are happening quickly, but then lots of things move very slowly. So it's quite difficult. You're not really sure where you are. But it's also very collaborative, and there's a great energy in that. But I think ultimately my first love is writing books, and always will be.
So you haven't got a taste for the red carpet then?
Oh, well, I certainly have a taste for the red carpet. That was amazing. And it was, to be honest, I am not somebody who craves the limelight. So I'm not actually that comfortable in the limelight. But that particular night was such a special one. I mean, it was really daunting. Cameras flashing, lights everywhere. But it was also an absolute career highlight. And I'm so grateful.
Did you bring the gang?
I did. I brought my husband and my daughter, and also my sister. She acted as my PA for the night, which was fantastic. So it was nice to be able to share it with them also.
Well, Only in New York is your latest, your 16th. Any interest or is it too early for movie rights?
No, here? We do have something bubbling up, but I can't speak about
it, obviously.
You
speak about it, all right.
And look, I'll come back in 10 years' time and talk about that.
Well, it's available everywhere. You will see it. It's called Only in New York, with a very nice cover, I have to say, kind of suggesting the writer and the reader. But it's available everywhere. Melissa Hill, author of Only in New York, thank you very much for joining us in studio.
The Pat Kenny Show
with Aviva Insurance.
Weekdays at 9 a.m. on News Talk.